Welcome to The Code Review, a weekly web development podcast with your hosts Dylan Marsh and Brandon Timmish.
Hello, everybody. I'm Dylan Marsh.
And I'm Brandon Timmish, and this is The Code Review.
This week, we're going to be talking about staying healthy at your desk job, being a contractor versus salary, and marketing your app.
Yeah.
So we don't have a guest with us this week.
Nope.
So it's just Brandon and I, sorry. we're recording this after Easter. So how was your Easter break?
It was pretty good. It was relaxing. Where I live right now, we're not around a lot of family. So it was just mostly my wife and I. And kind of just relaxing around the house, which was super nice.
Awesome. Yeah, my mother-in-law's in town. So we had her and my mother stopped by and did the whole Easter bunny thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We had a good time.
Yeah.
But yeah, so staying healthy at your desk job, which I need now more than ever after the ham I just ate. This is a topic you brought up, and I'm sure a lot of people can probably relate to the fact that, you know, if you're sitting all the time, you're doing a lot of development work, or, you know, whether you work at a company or you're an independent freelancer, we usually sit, and a lot of people have standing desks, and I've actually seen a lot of people use like exercise balls. Have you seen that?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know if that has any benefit for your health, but I always thought, how do you get any work done? Because I would just be bouncing on this ball all day.
Yeah. I personally wouldn't be able to do that. I mean, I don't know what it would confer for like health benefits, but it would not be for me at all.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that one's tricky.
Yeah. Yeah. So for like the staying healthy at your desk job, I mean, I'm sure, some of you might be able to relate where, you know, when you're younger, you're super active, or, you know, you're used to doing things when you're younger, pretty much the only jobs you can qualify for are manual labor and things like that. So, I know for me personally, when I moved from that, got done with college and started my first desk job, within like 6 months, 8 months, I like just noticed super fast. I was like, wow, I am getting out of shape so fast.
I hurt everywhere.
I hurt everywhere. My lower back hurts. I'm 22. What's going on?
Well, I have a bad habit. I'm actually doing it right now where I cross my legs when I sit on my computer chair. So I'll be on my computer chair Indian style for like hours on end.
Oh, man.
And I can't stop myself from doing it. But
I do this thing. I'll like slouch back and like I've got like my legs forward above my chair and like my head's like art. Like it's the worst posture ever. And like that's one of the big things with desk jobs is just like posture and all the, you know, having poor posture is a major issue. And you might not notice it until you're like in your 40s, and then it's like, oh, I was sitting wrong for 20 years. Like, oops.
I mean, one of my favorite things to do, I worked at a company for 2 years, and we used to take frequent ping pong breaks. It's one of those companies where we had a ping pong table. But I also noticed in that little cafe area by the ping pong table, there'd be a lot of guys on their laptop. So basically what they do is they'd migrate from their desk, and then they'd go take a walk, and then they'd sit in a different type of chair, or they'll stand in the cafe with their laptop, or like kind of take laps around the building. And if you're at home, it's a much harder thing to like remind yourself and motivate yourself to do.
Yeah.
Because when you work at a company, you know, as good of a worker as you may be, sometimes you're looking for an excuse to get up and walk around a little bit or talk to some people or hang out and shirk your duties a little bit.
But, yeah.
You know, maybe some tips for if you're working at home or at a company, maybe you're just not doing those things, or you're new and don't have a lot of friends in the dev team yet. It's just to simply get up and change location.
Yeah.
And the reason why I'm saying that is because I can't stand standing desks. That came out awkwardly. because like my feet hurt. Like if I stand a bunch, I feel like that's a bigger issue for me personally.
And see, I think that's a misconception too, because a lot of people think, oh, standing all day, like that has to be a lot better for you than sitting all day. And to a degree, that's kind of right. Sitting all day is not good for you, definitely. And actually, I've got a few little like facts that I can I'll pull out a little bit later about that.
We need like a soundbite for fact alert.
Fact
Brandon,
alert.
Brandon whips his facts out.
And but also standing all day is super bad for you. And it is, like you said, it's really just changing position. And like, you know, you don't want to sit all day. You don't want to stand all day. And one of the things that I found probably about a year into working, when I started becoming a little bit more aware of the fact that my health was kind of going down a lot faster than I was expecting it to, just from sitting at a desk all day.
The moment you realized you're an old piece of shit.
Basically. No, or where you feel, yeah, when you're like, my back hurts, what's going on? So there was this thing called the Pomodoro technique. It's basically this, just an idea of you should work for a specific length of time. And I think it was like an hour, and then you're supposed to take like a 10 minute break. You just completely peel, and it's supposed to be for productivity, but I also used it just to kind of alert myself and get myself to get up and walk around. And, I felt like I performed a lot better when I was doing that. It was just super, I haven't stuck with it, but it was useful.
It's like a do what I say, not as I do.
Yeah, a little bit. But yeah, and there was a website I used called tomatotimer.com that it just automatically does it for you. So it was really easy. Changing, you know, getting up, moving around, super important. And some of the issues that come along with sitting a lot. Most people that have desk jobs later on in their careers, like the majority of the complaint is lower back pain. And I didn't realize that. And I just read this today, but you actually, if you're sitting for long periods of time over the course of many, many years, the curvature in your lower spine actually starts to straighten out, and it messes with your neck and your shoulders and your back and everything. And sitting also affects like your leg muscles, like you'll have like tightening in certain areas, and other areas will become a lot weaker because you're not supporting your weight, and muscles along your spine start to kind of give out, which is another also contributes to the back pain. And so there's all this stuff. And then in my first job, I actually had somebody show me research I wish they wouldn't have, where it showed that I think it was after like 30 or 40 minutes of sitting, your body actually enters something very similar to a diabetic state.
Really?
Yeah. And so sitting for a really long period of time, your metabolism just plummets, and like, it's super bad for you, which probably is why people with desk jobs have a higher likelihood of like heart disease and all these other things, because you're basically subjecting yourself to diabetes while you're sitting.
Well, next time on the code review, we'll be standing. You guys may hear my chair squeaking as he's explaining this. I'm fidgeting and moving.
It does make you feel uncomfortable. I mean, it isn't diabetes, but it's just I don't know all the facts. I'm not like a personal trainer.
No fact alert.
But you know, it's like, I think it's metabolism and like how your body processes glucose and like stores fat.
Like, there's like all the same metabolic state as somebody who would have diabetes.
Yeah. Which is probably why it's just important to, for anybody, it's important to exercise and, you know, eat right and everything, but especially for people that have desk jobs where you don't really see the light of day for most of your day. And it's just, it's a good thing to be aware of, because not only are you taking care of yourself, which should be a priority, but you'll feel a lot better and be able to be more productive if your body's operating efficiently, as opposed to your back hurting and your wrists and your neck and everything hurts. Why?
I mean, this is kind of a cliche for us to talk about, like, oh, you know, you're a programmer, get active, exercise. But I mean, if you think about it, like, developers are so focused on productivity and like, how can we get the most out of our time? And we typically not only work for a company, we maybe have some side projects, we're trying to learn additional frameworks. And that fatigue by the end of the day is exacerbated by being stagnant while you do your work. So if you want to get some extra time, and if you're having a hard time feeling motivated at the end of the night to, you know, subscribe to a course or learn some new framework, anything, try some of these tips, because guys, I've been doing it for a long time. And honestly, like, it is the best way to extend your working time And it's a little counterproductive, like stay healthy, take care of yourself, but work longer. You know? But I think that's the best way to sell it, to be honest. Like if you're a dev and this is something that matters to you even a little bit, don't think about it as much as like, oh, 40-year-old me will thank you. But, you know, you can get some like immediate returns right now. Because not only does your body become fatigued, but your eyes and your brain, you know, can only handle so much screen time and logical thinking before you're just pretty much burnt out. This is a great way to fight burnout in general.
Right? Yeah.
So I've noticed like the worse my work-life balance is, and if I'm doing less and less activities that aren't related to programming, the quicker I am to enter a burnout period where for like 2 weeks, I can't get anything done. You know, I can't be productive.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But yeah, I mean, and I've kind of had a, like the burnout, I had about a stretch of a year where I really wasn't doing anything here recently. Like I wasn't exercising, like my diet wasn't terrible, but it wasn't great. And I just felt like crap. Like I was having headaches and like, I was always tired and I didn't know what was going on. And I've kind of gotten back into, it's been a couple months now where I'm back to exercising like I used to. And I mean, got to tell you, it really does help with that burnout and fatigue. So it's been nice.
Yeah, definitely. And I can see some people saying like, well, my employer doesn't really have a lot of options for us to get up and move around. And or maybe you're on a, you know, really tight schedule right now to get a project out, or money's tight and you're a freelancer and you're trying to juggle a few tasks. Well, try to figure out ways to not only get up and move and stay active, but, you know, become a more productive and efficient programmer, like get up and whiteboard for a minute. Yeah. Right. So like if you're working on a problem, or maybe you don't even have a problem, you're just simply coding, instead of getting into that next feature or bug fix, get up and whiteboard it for a minute, because it may actually shave some time off of the actual implementation or your strategy of doing it. And you're getting up, you're standing up, you're exercising your brain, you're doing something a little bit different. you know, kind of stretching your wrists out, you know, maybe just a tip for everybody. And your boss can never yell at you for getting up and whiteboarding a problem, right?
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, it's also kind of the, you know, whenever you're stuck on a problem and you're like, oh, I'm going to sleep on it. Like just giving your brain a break away from the screen. Sometimes you might stumble across the answer that you've been looking for. So
yeah, it could
be
And a break from the screen does not mean like getting on your phone or playing video games.
Yeah.
I know that's a lot of our R&R activities.
Yeah.
Just more screen time. Yeah. Try to get off it a little bit. And, you know, it helps. I have a daughter, so she pulls me off of the computer quite often and definitely helps. I've probably become a more productive programmer, even though I have more responsibilities on my plate because I have that resolution period. Yeah. Where I'm like not actively working on a problem.
Isn't that such a paradox? It seems like the busier you get, the more productive you get.
Yeah.
And then like the less responsibilities you have, all of a sudden it's like, oh, I can't do this thing. And it's like one task.
Yeah. Well, you get up super early for preschool, stuff like that. It definitely forces me to be a better human.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that's a good segue into our next topic, which is being a contractor versus salary, right? We talked a lot about you know, how busy you might be, or this whole staying healthy at your desk job, whether you're at a company or you're freelancing at home. I'm sure there's a lot of people that listen that do either or. The way I look at it is if you're a freelancer, you know, you are getting freedom. And if you have a job with a salary, you get stability. And those like the easiest way to break this down is that those are the two takeaways, right? That's the two primary characteristics of having a job, being a salaried software developer or graphic designer, whatever you do, and being a freelancer. And I can't really say that one's better than the other. It's just different, and it depends on what you're into. But uniquely enough, like I've primarily freelanced in my career, and Brandon has primarily been a salaried employee. We've both done a little bit of both. But if I had to say like of an 80-20 role, I've been 80 freelance, 20 salaried, and probably vice versa for you.
Yeah.
So I can definitely speak to the pros of freelancing, but I'm curious on your take first of being a salaried employee and what that means. What are the advantages?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, when you're salaried, you know, a lot of the benefits of that primarily are depending on the company that you're working with. You're probably going to be working with a lot of other devs. And we've said in the past that importance of, you know, finding a mentor. And so being in those salaried roles, I've been on large teams and smaller teams, but within those, I've managed to find like a senior developer that's been able to help me and walk me through things. And I've been able to learn a lot from them. And then also, like you said, with stability, I mean, it's just, you know, it's predictable if you've got a fixed lifestyle. Like my wife is still in school right now, kind of want that, you know, guarantee of things are going to be all right as she's in school since I'm the primary provider right now. And yeah, I think it is, you know, the career being salaried. I feel like there are more people that do that. And so I don't, you know, want to make any assumptions, but I would assume that probably more people listening to this are salaried employees or primarily, like you said, 80-20 as opposed to being freelancers. But yeah, like you said, the only compromise is, you know, freedom. You obviously don't have much of a say in which projects you work in, depending on how much rein the company you're working for gives you.
Yeah. And when you're freelancing, you have a lot more say on the stuff you work on, but, you know, it's risky. Like if you don't have a large network of friends who do software development that you can bounce ideas off of and talk to on a regular basis, it's difficult because you're by yourself. You know, you're not like on a team where there's a bunch of other devs that you can collaborate with. You need to have the self-motivation to get up every morning, stay in your house and start work.
Yeah.
And that takes a really unique individual. And I think it's attractive to a lot of people, but I think the biggest takeaway is just understanding that it is an option where, you know, there's enough work to go around for a ton of software developers to get some projects and make their means. But I think what's really common, like you said, that, you know, keep going back to this 80-20 rule is you probably get 80% of your income from one place and 20% from like a freelance or a side work type business. And the biggest question that I've heard and a lot of people ask me personally is how do I go from like a salaried position to freelancing? And I think that's much more difficult, right? Like there's guys that freelance full time and there's guys that have a full time job and maybe dabble a little bit into freelancing. But switching over is like a whole nother animal, especially because if you have, you know, expenses, you have to pay to live.
Yeah.
You know, it gets more difficult as you become older and you have your own place and you have bills and, some of us have children that we have to, you know, pay for. But with all that said, being on the contractor side, there's some advantages to that as well. And huge one is taxes. So one of the things I wanted to do on this podcast was give like very real, tangible, tactical advice versus just bringing up nebulous topics that are like, yeah, I know that those are two options. But if you're a contractor, like a freelancer, and you work for yourself and you have clients that pay you, you need to set up a business, right? You can get like an LLC and you can do what's called electing to an S corporation. And that may, for some people may understand that. For a lot of people, I understand that may sound like gibberish, but it's just a simple election. It's a form and you pay, I think it's like $25 and it's probably different per state, but you can file it with your Secretary of State or whatever that is. And basically that strategy, if you have like a corporate account and then you transfer, so you're doing like owner distributions, you're transferring the money from your business bank account that your clients pay you into your personal account. If you do as an S corporation, you save a lot on Social Security taxes. And then everything you purchase as a quote unquote business that's technology related or even remotely related to your business is tax deductible. Like those are business expenses. Now, if you buy a cell phone or a TV, like if you're using those devices to test things, right? So if you're like doing a TV interface or something on your phone, and this gets really gray really quickly, and you should certainly consult an accountant. But yeah, there's some huge tax advantages. And then there's some negatives too. Like you need to purchase your own health insurance if you're a contractor versus you know, a salaried employee. So it gets kind of complicated, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, if you get some advice, go talk to a CPA. They can help you with a lot of the legal stuff, too, even though they're not attorneys. They're extremely familiar with how companies are structured, how to work as a freelancer, and what your pros and cons are. So you may find out that you can actually make less on contracts to equal your salaried, you know, income because of those tax saving advantages. And because of that, purchasing your own health insurance may not seem so expensive or so daunting because you're paying less in taxes than you would if you're just paying standard income tax and you're getting the standard deduction. And, you know, finding the clients that'll pay you $5,000-$6,000 for a website or to do some marketing work for them or develop them a very simple app is a lot easier than I think a lot of people realize. And that was something, you know, Brandon has a little bit of experience with, because I think you were also inflicted by analysis paralysis, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Just sitting there, you know, diving into research. Like I know it, I keep reading the things over and over and over, but I just never actually dove in and did anything.
Yeah. And so I'm not going to name anybody because I don't want to, you know, invade their privacy, but we have some mutual friends that, you know, constantly ask this question is like, well, I have a job and, you know, I've always been interested in that. And how do you do it? Like, how do you make that work?
Yeah.
I guess all I'll say is that it requires a very special person because you are doing this by yourself. You don't have a team, so you are solo. And I think you need to fully think about and understand what that means before you take a, you know, a dive or a change like this. And the others, you know, you have to sell and market yourself. We're going to talk about marketing your app a little bit, but it's kind of along the same lines. Is if you're, you know, if the idea of getting on a phone call with a client and selling yourself or articulating really well how you're a better option for them than somebody else, if that like frightens you, this is probably not for you, right?
Yeah.
But there's a lot of jobs that you can find job listings that are looking for a software developer.
Yeah.
And just ask them like, hey, I'm really, really interested, but I work as a contractor. Would you guys consider doing a contract instead of employment? Mm-hmm. And you guys will be shocked how many employers would say yes to that proposition. Mm-hmm. And I've done it. I've just gone on Indeed and said, hey, I fit your bill exactly. I'll work remote part-time. How do you, you know, what would you say for a $4,000 a month fixed contract?
Yeah.
There's a huge upside to companies doing that too.
And you've mentioned before, you know, that selling yourself as an employee where your employer is going to be paying you benefits or you're going to be salaried, you're going to be like really ingrained in that company versus if you're working as a contractor, you're selling yourself as a vendor. You're saying I can do this, this, and this, like review me based on my performance. And, you know, usually companies are more willing to do that because you'll usually be like, well, if I'm not doing a good job, you know, you can just let me go. You're not paying for insurance, none of that stuff. And so you've said before that that's sometimes almost an easier sell than saying like, I want to be part of your company. And like,
yeah, definitely. It's an easier sell if you can demonstrate ROI. And what I mean by that, so ROI means return on investment. And from a business's perspective, they're not only concerned with that, but it's a pretty big deal, right? They need to make sure that any money that they spend has some sort of a return, right? Like it's going to be a profitable decision for them. They typically don't look at ROI for a salaried software developer. They look at it as a cost of goods, right? Like,
yeah,
that's a built-in cost. It's an expense. But when you're a contractor for a company, that whole ROI thing starts to come into play. So it can be easier if you're a good match for that role or that company, but it is definitely different. So you can sometimes get much, much higher rates from a company as a contractor than you ever could with a salary, typically because the contract is shorter in duration and because the sell is different. You're saying, well, I bring full stack development experience and some marketing experience. If you're multi-talented or if you have experience in different areas, this works really well for you, because you can say, well, you can hire two guys on salary. You can have the onboarding cost, the risk of attrition or turnover if those people leave, or I can provide you these specific services and improve or build out this functionality and give you these services. Then they start to look at you as like a vendor, right? So they're like, well, if we pay him, $40,000, let's say over the next year or two, for part-time work, we're going to get this specific thing built, you know, sandboxed to 2 years. It's on a contract. It's just a different sell.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can ask for much, much more than you ever could on a salary, because they're looking at training costs and, you know, how much does a full-time employee actually work during a day? And there's benefits and there's some management. Then they have to pay people in HR to spend extra time because their workforce is growing. There's all these things that they factor in that comes out of your salary.
Yeah.
And, you know, you better believe anywhere you work, whether they say that it is or not, that's all a contributing factor to what your actual salary comes out to. And then after Uncle Sam takes some money out of your pocket, your take home pay is definitely impacted by that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's an interesting topic, but, you know, we can get into the deep into the weeds really quickly.
Yeah. I definitely think we'll probably end up having an episode at some time where we dive in a little bit more into the details of that and kind of that perspective, and maybe give a little bit more detail on the specifics of, you know, how you get into it, how you sell yourself and everything. So that would definitely be for a later episode.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, marketing yourself is a huge component of that. So I want to sneakily segue into our third topic of the show, and that is marketing your app. And let's say marketing your app slash yourself. Because if you're kind of a lone wolf and you're not a part of a team or an established organization, or if you have a software as a service or some sort of thing you're trying to make as a software developer, you are very much so marketing yourself. I think much more than people really understand. And it's a challenging thing to do, because I think it goes against the behavior of what makes up a great programmer. Right. So you're having to flip a switch and do something that's not as native to you.
Yeah.
But Brandon and I have talked a lot about it. And one of my philosophies on it is that you need a partner who's great at marketing if you are not.
Yeah.
But Brandon, you don't have much marketing experience.
No.
So what's your take on it? Like, what's the daunting part about, like, if you have like a software as a service platform that you're building, mm-hmm. It's total hypothetical.
Yeah.
What part is like most fuzzy for you?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily fuzzy. It's just, I think it's getting over that gut reaction of that constantly self-promoting, like posting your stuff everywhere, which is really necessary when you're marketing an app or marketing yourself. You need to make yourself publicly visible. But I think for a lot of devs, it probably seems pretty familiar that you probably don't want to be in the spotlight. Like, that's not a comfortable position for you. And so, you know, splattering your ads and posts all over social media probably is a really uncomfortable thing. And another thing about it, too, is it just seems like such an odd concept, because, I mean, when you say marketing, a lot of different images could pop in your mind. Like, there's ads and things, but a lot of people might think like, oh, billboards and like TV commercials, radio commercials, ads that pop up, you know, and Google, like, and a lot of times you might have doubts of like, well, is this really going to get people to click on it? And I think a lot of times it seems like people underestimate the attention that they could get just by putting it out there. Like, they don't have to do a whole lot with it.
I hate to cut you off,
but yeah.
It's a point that, so I have a lot of background in like front end and marketing is a lot of my experience, but marketing is not advertising. And I think you hit the nail on the head that's the biggest misconception that I think developers have, right? It's like, I can build this awesome app. I have a great idea. And I can develop the back end. I could develop front end. I have a lot of great examples I could pull from user experience. There's this framework and this API I'm going to use. And you get your business logic all settled out. But then you think that marketing is synonymous with advertising. right? That like in order to market to your app, that there's a budget implication or that you're deploying ads.
Yeah.
But the reality is, if there's any takeaway you can take from anything on being a developer, right? Like being that person and having to market a product or sell something, is that marketing is networking, not advertising. And networking is best done free. Just period. So, you know, there's a few different strategies. There's influencer marketing, which is finding people with an audience and then kind of social engineering a relationship with that person so that they will use their audience to give you a voice. Mm-hmm. So an example of that is like there's people on Instagram who maybe are in the development space. If you're building a development tool or if you're building a software as a service for people who work out like athletes, there's people that are micro influencers in that space. What I mean by market, like micro influencers, is that maybe they have 20, 30,000 followers on Instagram. Mm-hmm. Those are the people that you should focus a lot of time and energy on building a relationship with.
Yeah.
Right. So before you post anything about your product or service, go find and identify and make an Excel list of 10 micro influencers in your space and then start to comment and like their photos. Right. Like if they say, what's your what are you benching right now? If you're doing like in the athletic space, comment and say, hey, you know, I'm so weak. Like, I don't even know what a common bench weight is. 1,000. I don't know. But say, you know, I'm benching 212 right now. Where are you at? And, you know, say, awesome picture. I really like this. And don't do the spammy stuff where you say, like, this is great. You know, it's just like, well, is that, you know, but really like find, like have a natural ass conversation with a human being. If you do that, I promise you, if the person is worth like having a conversation with, they're not a total asshole, you can eventually approach the idea of like, hey, I'm writing this app. I know a lot of people in the, you know, workout/athletic or X, you know, replace your industry here space, follow you. Would you mind giving me a shout out? That person will, because you've put the time in to network with that person. Mm-hmm. And now your audience isn't zero. It's 20, 30,000.
Yeah.
And don't go over after the accounts that have 1 to 10 million, because they will absolutely do this for you, but they'll charge approximately $8,000 to $10,000 per post. That's how influencer accounts are very profitable.
Yeah.
You know, that's just one example. And there's a lot of ways you could do this with link building and blogs, and you can get really involved in like Reddit communities. Brandon's found a way to hack Quora questions recently by leaving his answers, which is pretty sweet. But, you know, I went on a huge tangent. But the idea is that marketing is more synonymous with networking and community than it is with like advertising or sales.
Yeah. And I know you've mentioned before, too, and maybe this kind of ties in with the marketing being more of networking and community. But, you know, to be successful building something out and marketing it, you have to give more than you take.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a few like, I don't know how to explain them, but like motivational coaches, Tony Robbins, Dave Ramsey, Gary V. Like there's a bunch of guys that will talk about things like, you know, you have to like give all this great value and before you can ask for anything, but that's so hard to, I don't know. That's hard to like make tangible. I think that's hard to wrap your head around, right? Yeah. Because I think, especially with programmers now, if this was a different podcast for a different industry, I'd probably have a different opinion on it. But I think developers really, really struggle with, and I'm saying this because I do, the whole idea that like what I'm doing isn't groundbreaking or it's not important enough or it doesn't solve a big enough of an issue. And I think that prevents a ton of developers from actually building an app or like a service business because they think that's just not, it's not Facebook or this isn't Amazon or SpaceX. And I'm telling you guys, even the simple apps make a huge difference. So yes, I mean, there's a ton of value to that. Gary V does this whole jab, 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 right hook, which is I'm going to give, and then eventually ask. But I am hesitant to tell developers to like provide value before they make their value proposition, right? Yeah. To ask for something in return, because we're critical people.
Yeah.
You know, we're very highly logical people. And I think what you do is you end up creating head trash. It's like, well, this isn't like groundbreaking enough. And the reality is like any of these services or app ideas, as long as it's not too outlandish, is going to be successful.
Yeah.
You know, whether that's $10 a month or $10 million, you know, annually, it doesn't really matter. They could work. Like, someone's going to find some value in whatever you're doing. Just stick to it and network and communicate and get involved with communities. Like, we all talk a big game about like how inclusive the web is and how the web interconnects all these people, but we are often the last people to actually take advantage of that.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, for me personally, before really getting into working on stuff with you, I mean, I really didn't use social media a whole lot. Like, I still don't even have like a personal Twitter, and I barely use Facebook and everything. And so all those social aspects are like, oh yeah, the web's great. You can connect with people. Like, I never actually used any of it. So it was kind of just like, yeah, all these other people are doing it, but I'm not for some reason.
Yeah. I think it just goes back to that type of personality. And I'm sure there's people listening. They're like, I have like 7 Twitter followers and mine's shitty too. But in part because I manage a bunch of social media profiles for people like my job.
Yeah.
But because I'm not really as focused on follower count. Neither should you. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, unless your brand is you specifically. And I would question yourself that if it actually is. But having access to an audience versus having the audience firsthand is just as valuable.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what we found. And that's why I don't really focus on having a gigantic personal social media following, because I know that there's tactics I can use to get access to those followings through second and third party connections.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's okay. And it's actually a lot less work because when I have something I need to promote or get out there, like I'll turn that on. But I'm not constantly focused on maintaining my own social following.
Yeah.
That's why the podcast is awesome for us. It's like so little pressure. You know, it's just a very regularly scheduled once a week thing that hopefully we're providing some value to you guys. But
yeah.
You know, it's a labor of love.
Yeah.
Versus a sales job.
Yeah. And I mean, I think too, with a lot of social media, you know, you've got this appearance to uphold as well. Whereas, you know, like our podcast, I mean, every podcast is probably different, but like ours is just a conversation.
Yeah.
It's really no different. Like earlier, before we even started recording, we were talking and Dylan's wife came down and thought we were recording because we were just talking, but that's just our conversation sound like our podcast. So
yeah, we put very little effort into this. But yeah, I mean, if you guys like the format of this, where we're giving a little bit more like tip based, we're experimenting with a bunch of different things.
Yeah.
Right? So like the contractor stuff and some of the executional tips on how to save money on taxes. What are the actual like pros and cons? I don't think that's something that's really talked about. I haven't found like any cheeky blog posts that said, here's how to quit your day job. They don't really cover that shit.
Yeah.
And same with marketing. Like, there's a bunch of stuff that we can talk about, and we want to bring you tips that aren't necessarily programming and like, you know, here's some common algorithms or like data structures or, you know, factory pattern you should be implementing. But, you know, these are things that all devs need to know. So if you like this format, we would really like to know. We're seeing a pretty good increase in our listener count.
Yeah.
But we haven't actually like asked anybody for feedback, and we're now activating our audience to say, let us know what you guys think. What do you like better?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Any feedback. And, you know, like we've said before, if you like it, definitely, you know, if you're not already subscribe, tell people about us, and, you know, just, you know, spread the word, and hopefully based on your feedback, we can give you guys the best value that we can.
Yeah, definitely. It's always so awkward when I just stare you deeply into the eyes. I'm like, should I look down? Should I? Well, guys, we enjoy it, and it really is something we like to do. So, yeah. Review, rate, subscribe, like, hit the bell, all the social things. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Thank you.
Yep, thank you, guys.